First of all, Mark, you and I are conducting this conversation on the morning of Wednesday, March 31st. And as of this moment, I'm not sure exactly what the status of this whole case is. Is Ian Freeman currently in jail waiting for bail? Is that the current state of the situation?
Yes. In fact, I'm holding in my formerly nicotine-stained fingers the order from the magistrate. It's not a judge. And this is a distinction that is lost on the press largely. This is a functionary. She's not a federal judge.
I see.
It's an order of detention pending trial. Now, this is basically a death sentence. It's the difference between a procedural question, which is selling Bitcoin, is it bad? And, essentially life prison. Because people in jail don't win cases because they really can't put them together. And the only reason you should be in jail is because you are a danger to the community or you're a flight risk. Now, at this point, she has claimed that he's a flight risk because he possessed a thing called a world passport. Now, this is a novelty item that anybody can purchase off the internet. So this line of reasoning means that anybody could be denied bail because there is the existence of a world passport. So he had one of these things, and he, of course, said he would turn over the novelty item. And she said that's not good enough because he could get another. And she said, effectively, he would fly to Mexico with a rubber chicken. And it's silly. Secondly, she said he's not dangerous to the community. But it's not just physical danger. He's economically dangerous. Now, I don't know what that means, but it's kind of silly. The state made the argument. I shouldn't say the state. The government made the argument, because in this case, it's not the state of New Hampshire. It's the government of the United States, that he was a flight risk because he's wealthy. And if that's a reason not to give somebody bail, there's a lot of people in the world that shouldn't be getting bail because there's people that are wealthy getting bail. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, it seems really pretty silly, all of this. Ian is the minister of a peace church. He's a pacifist. He's not a danger to the community. And if you dropped him off in Timbuktu and had the trial in 3 days, he'd get back here of his own accord because he cares that much about this trial and wants to be there.
Well, you know, I have always found that the resistance that you guys have always presented toward prevailing laws that you considered unconstitutional, and Ian especially, his willingness to go to prison or to jail for various and sundry demonstrations, to be part of your position on the First Amendment and your position on freedom in America, but not from a criminal motivation, from a civil disobedience motivation. And there's a huge difference. Now, the way this has been presented in the press, Ian has been depicted as a sophisticated, you know, internet criminal.
They use the term kingpin, too.
So tell us a little bit about that, because that really, for me personally, knowing you guys for all these years, and again, I don't know how you run your business. I don't know that much about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. I'm basically a layman, but I've always had the opinion from my position that you guys could be bad boys and rogues, but you're not criminals. That it was always for a purpose of demonstrating the line between when laws are just and they're not just. And every free society has had people like you in government, in the media, in activism. What's with this criminal thing? Is this being trumped up, or has Ian gone over the line in terms of exposure to really truly being prosecuted as a criminal?
Well, clearly he's gone over some line somewhere for being prosecuted as a criminal, because he's being prosecuted as a criminal. I would say that I've heard this saying, in the FBI, that if somebody loses a case, somebody's losing a job. And I don't know if this is true. I don't have any idea at all. But what I can say is it's reasonable to understand human nature in such a way that if a person works on a case for 5 years, and they don't come up with any charges in that 5 years, they were probably wasting government money and their own time. That the agent in this is essentially Ahab chasing the white whale, because She felt like Ian was doing something wrong, and there were certainly wrong things happening in the world. And internet criminals are hard to find. You know, they're skulking about from Cambodia and Nigeria and wherever, you know, Russia. But what's easy to find is some loudmouth on the radio in Keene, New Hampshire, who will not leave New Hampshire because he believes so strongly in the Free State Project. That guy's easy to find. Well, let's hunt him down. So there are several different charges here, and to me, they're all wrong. Let's go with the big one, is money laundering. The claim is that Ian sold Bitcoin to a guy who said he was going to buy drugs with it. And that's called money laundering in this case. Now, this is one of those special cases where drug laws get bigger sentences than regular things, because if, for instance, I bought a car from you and told you I was going to rob a bank with it and you sold it to me anyway, you would be accessory before the fact for bank robbery. But accessory before the fact for drug possession is a pretty meager thing. Drug possession isn't that big of a deal, but in this case, they say money laundering and they give you a felony, whereas, somebody having a few hits of acid isn't generally going to rise to even a felony. And somebody who assists them in that, I mean, what is that, a violation? I don't even know. But regardless of the fact, Ian, I've witnessed it myself, witnessed it multiple times, that if somebody told him what they were going to do with that money, and he told them, do not tell me. But if they told him, hey, I'm going to do internet gambling or this thing or that thing, he wouldn't sell to them, period. Mm-hmm. You know, to him, it was all about people getting Bitcoin. Maybe they would hold it, but he would prefer they spend it and come get some more and then interact in their lives. But he wanted people to get Bitcoin. And the reason is because cryptocurrency, as designed by Satoshi Nakamoto, is truth. It is an undeniable truth in the economic sphere. Money, as it is existing today, is lies. The United States Federal Reserve just recently stopped reporting M1 and M2. Well, what are those? Those are simply counts of how much money's out there. You can't do an accounting of money, period, if you don't know how much there is. So the government it functionally exists in a state of lies when it comes to its money. Bitcoin must, by its very nature, exist in a space of truth. And that's why we pursue this, because we believe it is the very best thing. Now, I haven't sold, I didn't participate in Ian's stuff. I thought it was kind of silly. Why make the kind of money that he was making, which wasn't that much, honestly, doing all that work for so little, but he did it as a mission, and he's proud of it.
Well, the newspaper depiction indicates that Ian was sitting on top of a million bucks or something, a large amount of money. So it comes across like Ian. I don't want to say you guys, because I don't want to implicate any more people than necessary. Ian comes across as looking as though he's made a fortune in this endeavor. So how do you deal with that?
Sure. So they claim that there's, one point whatever million dollars or whatever. This is operating cost. If a business is making $1 million in a year, it's not that big of a business, honestly. And the margins are what the margins are in selling Bitcoin. I couldn't tell you the specifics of it or anything like that, but he's not, keeping all of that. And this was day and night work. To do this, he was doing it. He was completely driven by passion. And I'm telling you, as a guy who knows him, he didn't need the money and he was driven by passion to do it.
Well, I've always had that impression about Ian and certainly about you. And I have to say that Ian has been under consideration as a leading candidate for a number of years now for the Talker's Freedom of Speech Award because of his outspokenness and, in some cases, reckless in terms of his own safety in dealing with these things. This is not the first time governments, whether it's local Keene or larger, have been after Ian for various and sundry infractions. Am I correct?
Yeah, Ian's beaten them many times, and I'm hoping he'll beat him again. He is a master at baiting these people in and getting them to react before they, or, you know, when, before they should or when they shouldn't. And then as a result, he whoops them. He beat the town of Palmer, Mass in a court case over filming in the courthouse. And, you know, they arrested him. They threw him right in jail. He was gone. And, you know, he beat him on that one. He beat the town of Keene, New Hampshire, when they raided his house because there were too many adults sleeping on the other side of the duplex. And they weren't, but they did. And he beat them over and over again in the case with the meter maids, the Robin Hood case. They, you know, there was all kinds of aspects of it. Are you allowed to follow a meter maid around with a camera and ask questions and, you know, things like that? Again and again, Ian has managed to coax them in and chop their heads off. Now, the question is, will that happen here? And, you know, the FBI is a much bigger agency, and they do not like to lose. And I certainly am in fear for my friend, and hope that he can be back on the airwaves again. Mind you, I have the most to gain from all of this. I get a nationally syndicated radio program that has been managed in, you know, half managed with an irascible business partner for some time, and now I can do whatever it is that I wish. Mm. But I want very, very much for my partner to get out.
Well, I do want to say again, I've known you guys for years, and I've never known you to be anything other than selflessly supportive of Ian, who tends to be more of the you're the straight man, and he's the wild card in terms of it. Yep. But it's more than just the two of you. I know that you have a cast of characters and different people are on the show, and the show's been going on for years, and the show still has the image of being some, you know, underground show. But the fact is, you're one of the biggest you're one of the biggest shows in the country. But you do walk the walk and not just talk the talk. I know that's why I'm interviewing you this morning for Talkers. I know that the two of you are dedicated to each other, but my final question, and we're going to follow this very carefully, is what is the status of the show at this point without Ian? Are you able to communicate with Ian regularly? Has he appeared on the show from the jail? And are you doing the show alone? Have you had positive or negative feedback from listeners? What's the status of the show at this moment?
We have we've lost hosts, but not in the very recent past over this arrest. But we have lost hosts in the past over, just the belief that the government was going to raid. And you know, two of our favorite hosts, we really, really like them. But you know, they didn't want to face the teeth of the federal government, and that is completely fair. I do have, by and large, my entire cast of characters from Keene, New Hampshire, with new people wanting to fill the space all the time. We have sort of a two-tier ranking system at Free Talk Live, and basically it means, can you run the board or not, you know, host versus co-host, that kind of thing. We've got something like 10 co-hosts, and they're on at different times, and some of them are just stand-ins and these sorts of things. And we have, at this point, three, but the fourth being Ian, regular hosts. And we have the days split up. There's three on the air every day. I just want to make sure that everybody's comfortable. The days that there were only two hosts on the air is generally reserved for Ian and I, or at the very least, one of the main hosts. And so, yeah, I mean, things go on. We were off the air the first night because the federal agents came in, and I can't call this anything but malicious. I cannot understand why they would go to the back of a radio rack and just pull wires out. What does this have to do with Bitcoin and money laundering? It's beyond me. Mm-hmm. Now, they could have just taken, they took all kinds of equipment. They could have taken more had they wish. To me, it just seems like knuckle-dragger behavior. They certainly pulled the wires out of back of all the cameras. I guess they thought, this is going to record me. I don't know what they thought. And presumably, what are they afraid of being recorded for? What are they doing in that studio that they don't want to be recorded doing? Well, I don't know.
Well, the whole idea of recording, the whole idea of recording and body cams is a major issue all across the current reevaluation of police operations in America. And body cams and recording is something that is a centerpiece in the evidence aspect of many cases. So, you know, it falls
into... The FBI does not like recording. They don't like it. They're the singular among police agencies in not recording witness encounters. So that guy that they shot in Orlando, I don't know if they murdered him or not. You know why I don't know if they murdered him? Because there wasn't a camera in the room. They just shot a man involved in the Boston bombing, or, you know, implicated in the Boston bombing situation. And we'll never know what occurred in that room because FBI agents believe themselves to be so righteous that they don't need cameras. Now, the average cop on the street, oh, yes, we must give them a camera so that we can make sure that they're not out doing bad and nefarious things. But our glorious FBI agents, well, it might harm the way they do their job.
Wow. So I said that I had one question, but I have one more. What's the status what's the status of your legal defense? Do you have lawyers? Are you mounting some, because you said it's hard to defend this when you're in jail in terms of Ian's case, but yes. You guys are so educated to all of these processes. This is the world you live in. This is the water you swim in. How's the status of your legal defense effort?
So, all is well in that that realm. Nobody should talk about how much money they make, but businesses tend to, right? Mm-hmm. And Free Talk Live isn't a business; it's a mission of a church, but. We do, you know, we have advertising and things like that. So I'm going to tell a little story, and it's a really great story. And I hesitate to tell it because you're such a big venue with so many powerful ears, but I'm going to tell the story. And if I tell a story, I always tell it true, Michael. Mm-hmm. Back in 2010, December the 28th, 2010, a caller called in to Free Talk Live and mentioned Bitcoin, and talked about it and explained it to us. Now, we were as skeptical as any libertarians would be. Well, is it backed by gold? You know, and that sort of things that we want to know. What about ammunition? Is it backed by stored food? You know, the kind of things that libertarians can't care about. I'm obviously teasing. But we asked questions and we were skeptical and these sorts of things. But we'd always talked about currency on Free Talk Live because we believe strongly that the government banker-controlled currency that exists is wrong and evil, and it robs Americans through inflation of their earning power, and that nobody understands this, but here's a really easy way to understand. In 1964, when silver was in quarters, and the minimum wage was $1.25. Today, those same quarters, just the silver in those quarters, is worth about $35. So the minimum wage in 1965 converted in silver today is $35. Now, you can believe what you want to believe regarding the minimum wage. I think that it's wrong, and I don't think the government should be involved in other people's transactions. But you would also agree that clearly something's up when it comes to the money, because this is clear. A couple of weeks later, I got an email from one of our amplifiers. You know, every radio show is out there has got their Mouseketeer Club. Ours are called amplifiers because we use the money to advertise, market, and promote Free Talk Live. And you can go to amp.freetalklive and sign up today. And so this guy, any amplifier, wanted to come to town and show me pictures of his kids. I'd go and have lunch with him, right? No problem. We love our amplifiers. This guy wanted to come to town and tell about this magic internet money that we had discussed on the air. And it turns out that guy's name is Gavin Andreessen. And he was at the time the head developer of Bitcoin. What he called the red keys had been handed to him by Satoshi Nakamoto. And he explained it all completely, and by the end of the conversation, I was convinced enough to offer to sell him ads for, at the time I only had podcast ads available, for his magic internet money, because, you know, what a great idea. And he he asked if I would pay for his meal so that he could send me some Bitcoin. Now, Bitcoin's worth about $60,000. One Bitcoin is worth about $60,000 today. But at the time, it was worth 27 cents. So I believe the number was 42 or 46 Bitcoin for the meal is what he sent me. And that's a lot of money today. I can't do the math in my head, but it's a whole bunch. And then after Gavin, you know, we talked about Bitcoin on the air. We got a little excited about it. You know, we explained it. And we didn't consider it the perfect option, but we considered it a lot better. One of our main advertisers, his name is Roger Veer. You can look him up. And when you do look him up on the internet, I suspect the word Bitcoin Jesus will follow, because that was his title for many, many years. And Bitcoin Jesus heard, well, Roger Veer heard the show, and he got very excited about Bitcoin. I think more accurately, you should call him Bitcoin Johnny Appleseed, but, you know, people are irreverent, whatever the case may be. And he began investing in companies. This is a wealthy man. Investing in companies to promote Bitcoin, one of them being blockchain.info. And I believe he was in early in Coinbase and a variety of big names now. And he's an extraordinarily wealthy man and whatever. But he shortly thereafter, after he got excited, he was about one-third to one-fifth, so let's call it a quarter, right? He was about a quarter of our ad budget in a given month. And Roger Veer said, "Mark, I'm switching to Bitcoin." Now, he's not the kind of guy that's used to being told no, but at that moment in time, I'm running a business, and he's a quarter of my revenue. And that's a pretty big deal. Wow. All you could buy with Bitcoin at the time was porn, VPN services, and alpaca socks from some nut job on the internet. And I was very concerned about this. I said, "Why don't you just do our new Sunday show?" We just rolled out the Sunday show at that time. Just so go from 6 days a week to 7 days a week, and we'll take one-seventh of the new total in BTC. So we paid $500 worth of Bitcoin for, I don't know, 2-3 months, something like that. And Bitcoin went up in that amount of time, and I was able to take 1,000 Bitcoins, and it was worth $1. And I used a company called Crypto Exchange. And I can't tell you how exactly the transaction worked, but I know that I went to Bank of America in Keene, New Hampshire, right there on Central Square, which is circular, and I received $1,000 in crisp $100 bills. And I brought them to Ian and Laura. This is in separate instances, but I really would like you to imagine them together. I fanned it out and put those $100 in their faces and shook it and said, "See, it's real money." And we began to accept after that, because there was still pressure from Roger, Bitcoin for advertising for the total. Mm-hmm. Now, we received Bitcoin at $1, and it's worth $60,000 now. Obviously, and we've had 15,000 Bitcoins pass through Free Talk Live. I have no idea what Ian's done with his mission and selling Bitcoin or anything like that, but we've had that much come in. Now, obviously, you know what it's like to run a radio program. There's bills to be paid. There's people who need contractors that need checks and all that stuff. We don't have a half of that. We don't have a quarter those kind of numbers. But it's still worth a great deal. And Free Talk Live is well-funded as a result. So will these people get lawyers? You're jam right they will.